This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi everyone, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and the topic that we're going to talk about today is Leopold and Loeb. Of course, the famous teenagers who committed what was called the crime of the century back in the 1920s. But before we get into that story, we've been on a little hiatus because apparently some members of our team did not make this job a priority. But having said that, we're back now.
Chuck.
And let me introduce to you the rest of the team. We have, of course, a very young and talented young Brittany with us today. How are you, Brittany?
I'm dandy. How are you?
Good. How have you been spending your time off?
Being young and wild and free.
Oh, that's actually a triumph song there,
yes,
young lady.
I am aware.
You all aware of that? Because that's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. I know that one.
Where? Well, we're glad you're here.
Thanks.
And then, of course, that we have Brandy, who has been on vacation, it seems like decades. I don't know if she was on paternity leave or marijuana leave or whatever, but the rumor was, of course, that you were at home smoking weed playing video games. Do you have any comment on that?
Staycation.
Brandy? I have no comment except to say namaste, my people.
Well, we're glad that you finally decided to show up to work. And, of course, we're also joined by the very honorable, distinguished, well-mannered...
Yeah.
Well-mannered.
Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Walters III, affectionately known as the...
Douchebag McGee.
Affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman.
Or nah.
How are you, Colonel?
To me, I could not be better. This has been a... If you are a lover of civil rights, this has been a wonderful week in this country. Poor people got to keep their health care. Gay
yes.
people got to get the, although, you know, the gay people can get married now. That's like saying, you know.
Yeah, it's not really a win there.
It's not a win-win. You can go play in the traffic. You can run on the expressway. You can, gay people can do now. They can swim with crocodiles. That's what it's like.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's probably some gay folks who want to get married, and congratulations to them.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of gay folk that don't want to get married, and then when the ruling came out, they were like, oh, Kennedy, you son of a bitch, you.
Yeah, now I've got no excuse.
Mm-hmm. They got commitment issues because gay people got commitment issues.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I do want to say something about, we also had an officer that was killed in line of duty here recently. I couldn't help it.
In Cincinnati.
And so our, you know, my heart breaks for his family. It was a rough day for the city. And it was a sad day, actually, all the way around. It was really, so we had, you know, the good, and we had these great things happening, and then we had this, from all accounts, a really great guy and an exceptional officer that was shot and killed by a gentleman that ambushed him.
Yeah.
So,
and his name was Sonny Kim.
Sonny Kim.
Yeah.
Sonny Kim, it was a, another one of those things that, for whatever kind of tragedy it was, when you saw the route that they took from the visitation to the cemetery where they put him to rest, it was just packed. It was lined with people.
Yes.
That took an hour out of their day to stand on the side of the road to pay their respects to this man. And that was a beautiful thing.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. So rest in peace, Officer Kim. And also congratulations to all of our gay and lesbian listeners that you have the same civil rights that the rest of us have.
Good luck with that.
But anyway, let's
you ask for this, just remember that.
And you know, and just I would like to know, because you know, I got a lot of Christian friends, Timmy. I got some
Christian
friends.
That's hard to believe.
And yeah, it is hard to believe, but I tolerate them. I'm a tolerant man.
It's not nice.
I'm keeping track. So far, there has been 5 traditional marriages ruined by this gay marriage rule. So, just so we keep track. There's a tally.
You're keeping count for the...
Yeah, because if you remember, Mike Huckabee and the rest of those knuckleheads said that it was going to ruin marriage for everybody. And there's been 5 that have been casualties of the gay marriage thing.
Why 5?
Five women that left their husbands for other women.
Yeah, women are hot, man. That's going to be the problem. All women are going to find out that all the other women are hot, and then we're gone. We're out of business. But anyway, just kidding. We're just kidding. We're happy for the Supreme Court ruling, and congratulations to all those who are now able to get married and follow their hearts. But now, let's talk about something a little bit more gruesome, and that is the murders of Leopold and Loeb. For those who are not familiar with the story, on May 21st, 1924, two wealthy and, by all accounts, brilliant young teenagers in Chicago attempted to commit what they thought would be the perfect crime. And they did it just for, basically, for the hell of it, for the thrill of it. It was Nathan Leopold and Richard Loeb. They kidnapped a 14-year-old boy by the name of Bobby Franks. They beat him to death in a rented car, and then they dumped his body. This was referred to at the time as the crime of the century. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background both on Leopold and Loeb, and then we're going to get into the murder itself. Leopold and Loeb, as I said, they came from wealthy families in Chicago. They were both very intelligent. Nathan Leopold was born on November 19, 1904. Very wealthy family. He was a child prodigy, and he spoke his first words by the age of 4 months. He reportedly scored 210 on an IQ test, which, you know, that's kind of like in my range when you get up there.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but...
I'd call him dummy.
At the time of the murder, he had already completed a undergraduate degree at the University of Chicago with honors. So he planned to then go on to study law at Harvard. He reportedly had studied 15 languages and spoken 5 of them fluently. And he actually achieved a measure of success, although he was just a teenager, as an ornithologist. Apparently, he had
That's a bird watcher, ain't it?
Yep. He had been quite the expert on ornithology and identified Kirtland's warbler, which I know you're very familiar with, Chuck.
What a warbler is, yeah.
Yeah, he was an endangered songbird at the time and had not been deserved in...
Not wobbling, wobblers.
I see some wobbler. You know, I like a good wobbler.
So, I mean, as at an early age, this kid had, you know, he was...
the young Brittany on a Friday night is a wobbler.
On a Tuesday afternoon.
Tuesday afternoon, whatever.
So anyway, Nathan Leopold was very accomplished for his young age. His friend, Richard Loeb, L-O-E-B, was born on June 5, 1905, also to a wealthy family in Chicago. His dad was a wealthy attorney and a retired vice president of Sears and Roebuck. His father was Jewish. His mother was Catholic. And like Leopold, Loeb was exceptionally intelligent. He skipped several grades in school and became the youngest graduate of the University of Michigan at the age of 17, which I know you're a big fan of the Wolverines there, aren't you there, Colonel?
I am, and I will have you know, Timmy, that I skipped a grade. In school, I was moved from the third grade to the fourth grade.
Wow.
Really?
They considered me a prodigy. It was kind of funny because I was at a very diverse school, and they moved four of us up. And there was Karen Ruffin, if you're listening, hello, Byron Hill, and Sheila, I cannot remember Sheila's name, but of the four of us, we had me, the white guy, mm-hmm. Byron was the black guy, Sheila
just reading Rainbow
was Asian, and Karen was the African-American woman.
And it's fascinating, Charles.
Here's the fascinating thing. Is that the whole year we went through the fourth grade,
yeah.
2 weeks before school was over, Timmy,
mm-hmm.
my principal walks out the door of his office, drops over dead in the damn hallway. 2 weeks of school left, we get a new principal, and you know what the new principal said?
Hold you back.
No.
She pulled us back into the third grade. I've never gotten over that.
That's traumatizing.
Your classes are traumatizing me right now.
Well, I mean, they put me through the fourth grade. I had to get the fourth grade things. And I graduated as a third grader. I've been a high school
You graduated as a third grader?
I'm glad you passed the third grade.
I could have failed. Okay, I'm digressing here, ain't I?
Yeah, yeah. When we have the podcast on you, then you can go. You can talk all you want.
We need a podcast on Chuck Walters.
No. You know what I would like to just point out, Timmy? Does some of my friends listen to this? They think you're kind of a hostile, cantankerous, aggressive, irritable. They think you get irritable too easy, Tim.
So they're observant. You get observant friends. Very well.
They wouldn't think that if they knew you really well. I'm just saying.
Really?
They wouldn't think that you were unneeded hostility.
Oh, okay. So you think,
I understand your hostility.
You think my persona is differently on the show than
No, I think you're hostile.
No, we need you to keep us on track.
We think you're a jackass all the time.
I think your hostility is warranted.
Thank you, Brandy, but somehow that's not comforting coming from you.
That's hurtful.
All right, look back to Leopold and Loeb. So Loeb was, as with Nathan Leopold, Loeb was very intelligent and with the colonel. Very intelligent, and like the colonel, he has been described as lazy, unmotivated, and obsessed with crime.
Awesome.
So you do have a lot in common with him.
We do, but I never killed nobody that didn't have a coming.
Right. But Loeb spent most of his time, instead of excelling, building upon his success in academics, he spent most of his time reading detective novels, which I used to read because they would always have these hot-looking women.
No, that's a detective. Magazines.
Yeah, detective magazines.
They had the women tied up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never.
True Confessions, you remember?
True Confessions. Yeah. I never watched, myself, no.
You know, it was hard to get porn.
You don't even know what he's talking about.
I used to get the Playboy for the articles. I remember the Terry Bradshaw interview, but go ahead. I'm digressing again.
Okay, so Leopold and Loeb, they both grew up in the affluent neighborhood of Kenwood in Chicago, South Side. You know where that is, Chuck?
Kenwood in the South Side?
Yeah.
You know, the colonel goes stop by Kenwood every once in a while because the south side of Chicago,
mm-hmm.
it's the baddest part of town.
It really is.
I've heard that.
Yeah. I've heard that, too.
Mm-hmm. So the Loebs owned a summer estate in Michigan in addition to their mansion in Kenwood. And they were two blocks from Leopold's home. So they lived in the same neighborhood, although they didn't really hang out much until they met when they were both attending the University of Chicago.
So they didn't hang out much till they met?
Yeah, they didn't hang out as kids, I mean. They knew each other, but they didn't hang out until they met again at the University of Chicago and discovered that they had a mutual interest in crime. Leopold was particularly fascinated with Friedrich Nietzsche and his concept of supermen, transcendent individuals, which basically means that some people are above the law because they're superior. Again, I'm not.
I'm gonna go with that one, Demi.
Okay, I know you're a big Nietzsche supporter, but anyway, so they both kind of bought into this concept that they were, because of their intellect, they were superior, and that rules did not apply to them. So they started breaking rules. So they thought they were superior. So they started doing little crimes. Like they broke into a fraternity house at the university. They stole some pen knives. They stole a camera. They stole a typewriter that they will later use in this murder that we're going to talk about, kidnapping/murder we're going to talk about. But they didn't get a lot of notice. Not too many people took notice of their crimes. And so they started doing more serious crimes, including arson. But still, the problem seemed to be that no one was paying attention to them. So disappointed with the absence of any media coverage for their crimes, they decided to kick it up a notch. They decided to plan and execute the perfect crime that would get the public's attention and confirm their self-proclaimed status as supermen and above the law. And so Brandy is going to talk to us about that crime.
So the two of these numbnuts settled on kidnapping and murder of a young boy as their perfect crime. And they spent 7 months planning this thing out. Everything from the method of their abduction to the disposal of the body.
Well, they ain't too damn smart. I plan that stuff out in like...
I know. It takes you like 10 minutes.
There's an app for that, aren't they?
It takes longer to dig the damn hole than it to plan out the murder.
So they decided that, you know, these geniuses decided that they were going to... they were going to ask for a ransom.
That's money in exchange for the giving a kid back.
Bingo.
Yep.
Bingo. So they're making this ransom demand. They devised this intricate plan for collecting it, and it was, you know, this huge series of complex delivery instructions and, you know, how it's going to be communicated and you know, set up and whatever. It was just ridiculous. And they typed the final set of instructions involving the actual money drop in the form of a ransom note using the typewriter that they stole from the fraternity house. They also went and selected a chisel as their murder weapon, and they went out and bought it. And they searched around for a suitable victim, mostly on the grounds of the Harvard School for Boys in the Kenwood area, where Loeb had been educated. And they decided on poor little Bobby Franks. He was the 14-year-old son of a wealthy Chicago watch manufacturer. He knew Bobby, Loeb knew Bobby well. It was his second cousin. And he also lived across the street from him. They played tennis at the Loeb residence several times. So this was not a stranger to these guys. This was somebody that at least one of them knew. They put their plan into motion on the afternoon of May 21st, 1924. He rented an automobile under the name of Morton D. Ballard, and they offered Franks a ride as he walked home from school. Initially, Franks refused, since his destination was less than two blocks away, but Loeb...
Yeah, thanks for the ride, guys.
Yeah, I'm almost home.
It right. Always happens close to where you live.
Yeah.
Everything does.
I know. Loeb persuaded him to enter the car because he wanted to talk about a tennis racket that he'd been using. That old ploy.
The old, let's talk about your tennis
racket. Yeah, get in the car. Let's
I guess they didn't have panel vans and puppies back then.
They didn't have etchings.
I guess.
Brittany, if someone drives up in a van and asks you to get in a car with them to talk about a tennis racket, refuse.
Yes, absolutely.
The precise sequence of events that followed to this day remains in dispute. But most opinions are that Leopold was behind the wheel of the car while Loeb sat in the back seat with the chisel. Loeb struck Frank sitting in front of him in the passenger seat several times in the head with the chisel, then dragged him into the back seat and gagged him with a rag where he died.
Which boy did?
This has, let's see, Loeb.
Okay. I'm keeping that in mind for when we talk about confession.
Right. Yeah, because one says the one did it, the other says the other did it.
Mm-hmm.
With the body on the floorboard out of view, they drove to their predetermined dumping spot near Wolf Lake in Hammond, Indiana. It's about 25 miles south of Chicago.
I think they have a casino there now, don't they?
They got a gentleman's club.
And
after nightfall, they removed and discarded Frank's clothes. They concealed the body in a culvert along the Pennsylvania Railroad tracks north of the lake. To obscure the body's identification, they poured hydrochloric acid on his face and on a distinctive abdominal scar as well as his genitals.
Ooh.
They did that to conceal the fact that he was circumcised. Where do you get hydrochloric acid? Like, whatever. But,
you know, even...
That's going too far.
Even when the body... Even when the person is dead, pouring acid on the genitals, that's a separate crime.
They needed to hide that he was circumcised.
I agree with the colonel. That's cruel and unusual.
That's cruel. And particularly unusual.
Well... Yeah, it was. So by the time these two Nimrods returned to Chicago, word had already spread that Franks was missing. So Leopold called Frank's mother, identified himself as George Johnson, told her that Franks had been kidnapped, gave her instructions for delivering the ransom, told her instructions would be forthcoming. They mailed the type ransom note, burned their bloodstained clothing, and cleaned all the bloodstains out of the rented vehicle's upholstery the best they could. And then they went to play cards.
See, that just does not sound like the perfect crime to me.
No.
You put some plastic down.
Yeah, something.
Or burn the car.
First of all, you rent the car, which is not bright. And then you kill a kid in the car.
Burn the car.
Yeah.
I mean, granted,
you can't burn a damn rental car. You know how much it costs you?
Yes. That's my concern. Less,
well, you factor that into murder. The ransom.
Well, obviously.
Cost of doing business.
How much was the ransom?
Rookie. I don't know. I haven't got that far yet.
Okay.
We'll go over it.
Cool.
I believe it was like $10,000.
Yeah.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It wasn't that much, but I guess at the time, it was a lot of time.
So they received the ransom note. The Franks family received the ransom note the following morning. Leopold called again, dictated the first set of ransom payment instructions. The intricate plan, it stalled almost immediately when a family member forgot the address of the store where he was supposed to receive the next set of directions.
Down, you know what I mean? I need to write this shit down.
And it was abandoned entirely. Yeah, really.
This was before Google Maps.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So the plan was abandoned when word came that a man named Tony Minky had found the boy's body. Their kidnapping ruse exposed. Leopold and Loeb destroyed the stolen typewriter and burned a robe used to move the body. Convinced they'd done everything they could to hide their tracks, they went about their lives. The Chicago police launched an investigation. Rewards were offered. Loeb went about his daily routine, just doing his thing. Leopold just talked to everybody. Mm-hmm. He's offering theories, telling everybody his opinion. He's on Fox News.
He's on Fox?
Yeah.
Well, Fox at 5.
Fox mm-hmm. at 5. They're fair and imbalanced.
He was with Huckabee.
Was he?
Claiming the gays did it.
Yeah, this dumbass even told a detective, if I was to murder anybody, it would be just a cocky little son of a bitch as Bobby Franks.
Well, that would really throw him off your trail.
Yeah. Nothing says that like
no red
the guy
flags
little,
there.
No. So the police had found a pair of eyeglasses near the body. Though common in prescription and frame, they were equipped with an unusual hinge mechanism purchased by only three customers in Chicago, and one was Nathan Leopold.
Uh-oh.
When questioned, Leopold offered the possibility that his glasses might have dropped out of his pocket during a bird-watching trip. The destroyed typewriter, which evidently wasn't that destroyed, was discovered soon thereafter.
And the significance of that is typewriters have their own signature.
Sure.
But this always
gets me... You learned
that
on CSI, didn't you?
I was the same.
I know you did.
Sometimes they call me in as a technical consultant. But it always gets me
that
as...
That never happens.
How do you lose your... How do you lose your damn glasses? I mean, how'd you find your way back here, blind some bitch?
I don't know. Maybe you just needed them for reading.
Maybe he needed two pairs of glasses.
Maybe
like
they were
like you.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Yeah, for those of you who don't understand that, the colonel was wearing two pairs of glasses when we started his
podcast.
And he didn't
sure.
even know.
I just wanted to make sure I was doubling up on my reading here. I was trying to read fast.
So, here's the thing I have concerns with. This is called the crime of the century, right?
I thought the abduction of Lindbergh baby was.
That was a crime of the century. The OJ thing was a crime of the century. The JFK assassination was a crime of the century.
We continue to one-up ourselves.
No. It just waters this whole thing down when you're using that term.
The two men came in for formal questioning on May the 29th. They asserted that on the night of the murder, they picked up a couple of women. Edna and May in Chicago.
Edna.
Edna's a whore. Using Leopold's car, then dropped him off sometime later near a golf course without learning their last names.
Yeah.
Just whatever.
That's okay. That's legit.
That could be legit.
They dropped him off at the fourth hole.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You don't have to know their last name.
Their alibi was exposed as bullshit when Leopold's chauffeur... His chauffeur... Well, then.
The chauffeur wasn't in on it, I guess.
Yeah, no. Told police that he was actually repairing Leopold's car that night, and the chauffeur's wife later confirmed that the car was parked in the garage on the night of the murder.
Well, those poor girls, how did they get off the golf course?
The chauffeur... Yeah. Outed him.
Yeah, his fucking chauffeurs will
you know,
get you every time.
You can never trust a chauffeur.
You cannot.
I always heard something different. If you pay them enough, chauffeurs see everything. No. You pay them enough, they keep their
homes
closed.
They like the Secret Service, but you got to hire an immigrant. Because
so
if they come forward,
you.
They get deported.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Look at you having everything worked out.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. So they are...
So they got busted.
They got
so they're
busted.
Idiots.
And they're arrested.
Yeah,
and
the perfect plan did not really... that's not the case. You said it took them 7 months to plan it?
Yeah.
You would have thought they'd have it a little more together, especially for when they got caught, because they have conflicting stories.
Well, they never thought they'd get caught, so why plan?
Well, I mean, if it were the perfect plan, you would need to have it all the way to the end to see, you know.
Go out like Thelma and Louise.
Yeah, I mean.
It did not take my wife 7 months to have two babies.
What?
I don't. Okay. So anyway, Brittany.
Thank you.
You should stick to bird watching.
No, the twins was born in less than 7 months. Well, it took them 7 months to hatch a plan. I had two babies in 7 months.
You hatched two babies.
I had two babies.
That's a lot of babies. Okay, so Loeb confessed first, and he confirmed that Leopold had planned everything and had planned to kill Franks in the backseat of the car while he was driving.
Snitches get britches.
And then Leopold's confession followed quickly after that, but he insisted that he was the driver and Loeb was the murderer.
Now I'm confused.
So if this were the perfect plan, they would have known what to say, I think. You know?
Well, they did. They can't, you know, they're just blaming the other one, and they're hoping the police can't prove it either way. Chauffeur's not involved. Chauffeur already busted him.
Yeah, chauffeur wasn't involved. It's just Leopold and Lou.
Okay.
Now, there was a testimony from an eyewitness.
Had it been, the chauffeur had been involved, it would be in Leopold, Loeb, and chauffeur.
It would have been.
The eyewitness, Carl, said that Loeb was driving and Leopold was in the back seat, suggesting that Leopold was the killer. However, both admitted that they were driven by the thrill of kill and that they both wanted to commit the perfect crime.
So Carl just happened to see them driving up the road.
I guess. I don't know who Carl is. Freaking I don't know Carl. Where Carl came from, but that's what Carl says.
Yeah, and I think the...
Doesn't he like Tatum's?
But really, I mean, based off both of their confessions, it's hard to determine, you know, who was driving.
I think mostly it's been accepted that Leopold was the one, the hammer man.
Okay, okay. So then during the trial, at Chicago's courthouse, the media became a spectacle of the third party.
What?
I guess of...
Yeah, it became a sensation.
It just became a circus. It was like the O.J. trial at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Loeb's family hired Clarence Darrow, one of the most renowned criminal defense lawyers in the country.
Who, of course, was a good friend of the colonel's at the Scopes Monkey trial.
At the Scopes Monkey trial, and you know, he made a good argument.
Was it 12 hours long?
It was 12 hours. It was like a filibuster.
Okay, we'll let her tell
it. It was like Ted Cruz at the buffet, 12 hours.
Oh, my God.
It's kind of like you on these podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gave it lengthy.
You opened the door for him.
You're getting tense again, ain't you, Jimmy? You're getting tense.
You opened the
Clarence door. Clarence Darrow, of course, very famous attorney, hired by Loeb's family, and he gives this eloquent 12-hour summation. I know.
It's all good. You can help me out. It was generally assumed that the men's defense would be based on a plea of not guilty but reason of insanity. Darrow concluded that the jury trial would almost certainly end in conviction and the death penalty. However, he elected to enter the plea of guilty, hoping to convince the court judge,
Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt?
No, John Calvary, to impose sentences of life imprisonment. The trial ran for 32 days, and the state presented over 100 witnesses documenting details of the crime. The defense presented that psychiatric testimony be used as well. It ended in that both the men were sentenced to life in prison.
And poor Leopold, I mean, one of the things that he was trying to call mitigating circumstance, he was trying to get pity for this. He was trying to get sympathy. As Leopold claimed that he had an ongoing affair at a young age with his governess.
So?
Now, the boy got a chauffeur.
Who doesn't?
And he's banging his governess, and he's saying, oh, I'm traumatized. Look at my terrible life.
Yeah, I'm traumatized.
It's, you know what it's like? It's like the guy's coming forward today to bang the hot gym teacher.
Female gym teacher.
Female gym teacher, yeah. They're not traumatized.
But Clarence Darrow did get he did save their lives. And his 12-hour summation where he pointed at about the inequality of the
he put the death penalty on trial.
Yeah, he put the death penalty on trial. And
as Clarence Darrow is wont to do.
Yeah,
He got the monkey off. I mean, when you can get a monkey off, yeah.
Then you got.
I read something that said that Loeb and Leopold wanted the death penalty over life in prison.
Well,
one
of them got their wishes.
They were cowards.
Yeah.
I mean, they were cowards. They say that. Everybody says that, though. I want the death penalty. I don't want to be life in prison.
No.
But when they start strapping you to the chair, they wet themselves.
Yeah, things get a little weird.
Everything else. Now, so they get sent to prison. They're still friends in prison.
Why do they put them in the same prison?
Maybe they're not happy in prison.
Were they cellmates?
They were not cellmates, but they hung around.
That was a problem, though, right?
It was a little bit of a problem. Now, there was pretty good friends in there, although at one point Leopold thought about killing Loeb, but he didn't.
And he asked him to step in his cell and look at his tennis racket. And
Yeah.
I was going to say, did they make a plan? It took 7 months.
No, he knew he wouldn't fall for that. It was a squash racket. He wanted to show him the squash racket.
He had some candy from commissary.
Loeb, and clearly these two was a little, you look at them, they're effeminate.
Where are you going?
I don't know.
Boys. There was very pretty boys.
Yeah, but we don't.
But Loeb, he was a little grabby. He'd get in the shower, he'd get a little grabby with people. And one day he got grabby.
You get your ass kicked for that.
Well, he got grabby with James Day. James Day took a razor to his ass, sliced him all up.
But James Day might. That's James Day's story, right?
Well, he was the only one living, so the victor
dead
writes
men tell
history.
No tales.
The victor writes history. Do we not?
Yeah, but there some also some wasn't he blackmailing?
He was blackmailing him, and then Loeb said, "You ain't blackmailing me no more." But really, everybody hated these guys. They kind of actually after a while started to blame, but when they came in. They had to protect them. They had to segregate them. They had to do everything else because everybody wanted to be the guy. Because
they were
killed
pretty boy asshats.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So James Day, James Earl Day.
There you go.
He was. I don't know if that was his middle name, but it sounded good. James
Earl
Day.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Anyway, he Loeb was in the shower and he got all grabby with him and he took a razor to him. So that's. James Day's story, he'd only one around to tell the story, so I'm going with it.
Okay, that's good. But there was also a side of that. There's also a story that he was blackmailing them. They were getting money from their parents originally, mm-hmm. and then that money started to fall off after so many years. And they, right. Day was blackmailing Loeb or Lebo.
Well, you know, after I learned this watching, I learned this from Loeb, some of my friends down in Angola, in a prison down there. You know, after 3 years, you get a life sentence after 3 years, even your mama don't come to visit you no more.
Yeah, you know, like 85% of the people are sentenced to Angola and never leave.
They get buried there.
Yeah.
But
Angola, where's that? Mississippi, Alabama?
I believe it's Mississippi.
Yeah, it's not. It's a prison.
It's Mississippi, Alabama, one of the two. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, you know, so he did. Now, Leopold, he run to his side, tried to comfort him, whatever, you know, but he couldn't do nothing. So, now, Leopold, on the other hand, he kept his interest up. He was still watching birds in the thing, you know, bird watching. He wasn't winning no contests or nothing, because it was mostly pigeons. Because he was by this, the Birdman of Alcatraz, before he got to Alcatraz, was the Birdman of Statesville. But anyway, Leopold got paroled. And much like most deviant criminals do, he went to Puerto Rico and married himself a Puerto Rican.
Why do you say that? Hmm? Why do you say that? We have listeners in Puerto Rico.
Where do you want to... No, I'm not... The Puerto Ricans are fine. It's the deviants like you that fly down there that take advantage of the Puerto Rican woman. And he married Trudy Garcia de Quevedo.
How old was she?
She was 36 years old. He was 66.
Oh, I bet she was hot.
See, yeah, she was too old for you at 66, but not too old for him. So he's married to this lovely Puerto Rican woman.
Rita Moreno. Did he marry Rita Moreno?
No, he did not. He married Trudy Garcia.
You know, yeah, you can't say that.
Yeah.
Quevedo.
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 Gringo.
Wow.
Anyway, now, you know, and this brings up the thing that. They have is now they have what they call affluenza, and these rich kids commit these crimes, and they say,
yeah.
Well, they've been so protected from society, and I like to watch the TV show The Detective, and one of the great quotes they had on there last week was a good beating always promotes personal growth. And I believe these rich kids somewhere along the line missed a bit good beating.
Maybe.
And I also don't like this whole crime of the century thing. Because I think the...
There's too many of them. Pick one.
Pick one? Clearly it's the Fatty Arbuckle scandal.
Lindbergh, maybe. They never did catch him.
I think the Kennedy assassination beat Trump's both of those.
Well,
they caught that guy.
Brittany? You weren't even around last night.
They caught that guy.
No.
What about the Lana Turner affair? I mean, this was only one person dead. How can be the crime?
Oh, my gosh.
And he's 14, so.
He's 14.
He was short.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens to our good friend, Mr. Leopold?
He gets back to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. He's so he is
he goes back to visit.
Chicago. Mm-hmm. He goes back through the South Side. South Side changed a little bit. He got knifed. He didn't really, you know, realize what the Crips and the Bloods was. He wandered through the wrong neighborhood.
Will you please wrap this up?
Okay. He died of a damn heart attack in 1971. He was atop his lovely bride, Miss Trudy.
What's your bride?
He was.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, he wasn't, but that's how he wanted to die.
Okay.
Anyway, he died of a heart attack in 1971.
Okay. So, that's it for Leopold and Lowell.
Well, I got a question, though. No. I wanna go.
Okay.
What would you say was a crime of the century?
I already said.
I don't get it.
You said Betty Arbuckle?
You haven't said anything.
Lindbergh, baby.
She wasn't alive last century.
She wasn't, was she? What was she born in, girl?
No, she was born
young.
In 19...
Hence young Britney.
96 or something crazy.
No, I'm older than that.
She's like Flock of Seagulls. They weren't even around.
92?
Yeah, older than that.
What year were you born?
91.
91.
91. So. 91, let me see.
OJ was a crime of the century.
You was born 91 when I was celebrating right about my 5th anniversary.
I was a junior in high school.
I was celebrating.
I was a newborn baby.
Okay. How about you, Colonel? What do you think the crime of the century is?
Well, I think the fake ape man back in 1912.
Yeah.
Look that one up. That's a crime. Richard Speck, you got the Tate Library. But really, when it comes to the crime of the century, I think we're going to go with Charles Manson.
Why?
Charles Manson.
I went to a bar the other day because that's what I do. And it was
like every other day because it was
here
Tuesday.
In Cincinnati, and they told me that they didn't serve tequila because Charles Manson lived up the street, and that's what he would always come in and drink. Do you think somebody was just being stupid, or is that a real
Charles
thing?
Charles Manson
Charles Manson did live in Cincinnati.
Yeah, somebody told me that.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, I don't believe the tequila thing.
I think they're pulling your leg.
Well, they didn't have any.
Well, it was out.
No.
They didn't want to tell you that.
Nope, it said on the wall, no tequila due to Charles Manson.
That's crazy as damn thing.
Brandy and I saw Evander Holyfield's ear, didn't we, Brandy?
We did.
You know when Mike Tyson
the bit off one.
Yeah, the one that, yeah. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been that extraordinary. But it's the ear that Mike Tyson bit off. We saw it, but
there's
some question.
It's at Montgomery Inn.
Yeah, Montgomery Inn, a restaurant here in Cincinnati. I think the Kennedy assassination is by far the biggest crime.
Before we end up, let me just say that Dottie Scott, I hope you're doing well.
Dottie.
You're a lovely woman. Thank you for checking on me on Facebook. You always got looking out for me.
Yeah, and I want to give a shout out to Noah L. I'm just going to give his last initial, who made a very nice comment on our Facebook page. And we really appreciate all of your folks, all your comments on the Facebook page. Please check us out on Facebook. Check us out on iTunes. And if you would, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave a comment. That's how other people find us. So if you could do that, we would really appreciate it.
And this, because we eat lunch right now and we got a lunch. If you happen to run across Logan and Tanner on your Coke labels, share a Coke with Logan or Tanner. I need those two.
Yeah, send them to the Colonel.
What
send
about Taylor? You don't like Taylor as much?
I got Taylor.
Has one.
Okay. Taylor's a dime a dozen. They're easy to get.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Congratulations
again
to all the...
Have a happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July.
Yes.
Yay.
We'll see you again real soon on History Dweebs.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcast or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.